listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderkart. Welcome back to another episode. It is January 30th. Happy hump day. It is cold. I can't believe how cold it is. We are experiencing a polar vortex. I just think of it as like the polar vortex of doom. I had to go out and start my wife's car. Personally, I don't have to commute anywhere. My commute is 5 seconds to my home office, but my wife had to go into work. Amazingly, the car started. It was this morning when I stepped outside, 19 degrees below zero with a wind chill factor of 30. It felt like 39 degrees below zero. I have not experienced cold like that in years. Basically, it takes your breath away. You don't want to breathe the air because you feel like your lungs are burning. It's crazy. In this cold, you know, you leave any uncovered skin out for it, and you can end up getting frostbite within minutes. I mean, it's cold. So if you don't have to be out in the next couple days, I would encourage you, you know, stay inside as much as possible. If you have to venture out, please dress appropriately and be careful. Use common sense. But amazingly, it's going to be up in the 40s this weekend. So crazy. That's Iowa for you. I got a few things I want to cover this week on the podcast. First, I want to talk about a bill in Virginia that will allow abortion up through labor. And then the Virginia's governor, Ralph Northam, made an appalling statement on the radio this morning. Then I want to also talk about Senator Kamala Harris, who's now running for president. She declared on Sunday. She was in Des Moines, and she had a few things to say. I want to discuss that. And then I had a conversation this week with Chuck Hurley, who's the vice president of the Family Leader. And he and I talked about their agenda for the Iowa legislative session, what they hope to see, some bills to watch out for. So be sure to listen into that as well. Before we get to all that, first, a word from our sponsor, American Principles Project.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
And we're back. And just when you thought that what happened in New York with their legislature passing and the governor signing their Reproductive Health Act, I believe it was called, that basically removed any restriction on abortions in the state of New York, and then the legislature applauded and celebrated when it was passed. Just when we thought, you know, you couldn't get worse than that, the Virginia House of Delegates said, hey, hold our beer. Delegate Kathy Tran introduced a bill that literally can allow abortion up into the moment of labor and during labor. And then there was remarkable, not a good way, comments made by Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. Both are Democrats. Delegate Kathy Tran was questioned during a committee meeting about the bill by Delegate Todd Gilbert, who's the House Majority Leader. And I want to play that clip for you.
So how late in the third trimester would you be able to do that?
You know, it's very unfortunate that our physicians, witnesses, were not able to attend today to speak specifically.
No, I'm talking about your bill. How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay. But to the end of the third trimester.
Yep. I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So, where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would
make. I understand
that.
I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Then this morning, Wednesday morning, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam was on WTOP in a program called Ask the Governor, and he was asked about this bill. And Governor Northam basically defended letting children die. He basically defended infanticide, and it's just unreal. Listen in.
No exception. There was a very contentious committee hearing yesterday when Fairfax County Delegate Kathy Tran made her case for lifting restrictions on third trimester abortions, as well as other restrictions now in place. And she was pressed by a Republican delegate about whether her bill would permit an abortion, even as a woman is essentially dilating, ready to give birth. And she answered that it would permit an abortion at that stage of labor. Do you support her measure and explain her answer?
Yeah, and I wasn't there, Julie, and I certainly can't speak for Delegate Tran, but I will tell you, first thing I would say, this is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, and the mothers and fathers that are involved. There are, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
And do you think multiple physicians should have to weigh in, as is currently required? She's trying to lift that requirement.
Well, I think it's always good to get a second opinion and for at least two providers to be involved in that decision, because these decisions shouldn't be taken lightly. And and so, I would certainly support more than one provider.
All right. Let's go back to the phones now for the governor. We're going to talk now with Mike, who's calling.
Alexandra DeSantis wrote about this bill in National Review. She wrote, quote, "The bill is called the Repeal Act because it removes all existing restrictions on abortion in Virginia. That includes permitting abortion in the last 3 months of pregnancy, eliminating informed consent and clinic safety requirements, permitting late-term abortions to be performed in outpatient clinics, and removing pro-life initiatives such as ultrasound requirements in the state's 24-hour waiting period. It has the backing of Virginia Democratic Governor Ralph Northam." Now, his remarks that he made this morning on WTOP, their Ask the Governor show, was just appalling. And Alexandra DeSantis also wrote about that today, quoting him. He was asked, basically about the bill and whether he supports it or not. And he said this, "This is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, and the mothers and fathers that are involved. When we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physician, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities. There may be a fetus that's non-viable." First of all, that's untrue. The bill does remove that restriction that's currently in Virginia law. So either he's being misleading or he's ignorant of this bill. But his comment, the appalling comment, is this, and I want to quote it again, just read from the transcript that DeSantis had in her article this morning, because I want it to sink in how just this is just unreal. "If a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between physicians and the mother. He's just promoting infanticide. He's saying it's okay to let this baby die. U.S. Senator Ben Sasse in Nebraska, who reintroduced the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, provided a statement to National Review, and he said this, quote, "This is morally repugnant. In just a few years, pro-abortion zealots went from safe, legal, and rare to keep the newborns comfortable while the doctor debates infanticide. I don't care what party you're from. If you can't say that it's wrong to leave babies to die after birth, get the hell out of public office." I agree with that sentiment. And Virginia voters, basically Governor Northam, they have a one-term limit, so he's out of office whenever his term's up, and I don't know if that's, I think it's in two more years. I think he was elected in 2016, but I don't remember that off the top of my head. I don't know off the top of my head. But this is why, you know, elections have consequences. Fortunately, I think there's probably enough votes in the Virginia legislature to block this. But the fact is, you've got this push to do this. And this just reminds me of Isaiah. Oh, and I had it in front of me. Isaiah 5. Hold on a second. 20. It says, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those," verse 21 goes on, "woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and shrewd in their own sight." And this is exactly what's going on with the pro-abortion crowd. I mean, they've become emboldened. And Senator Sasse is right. We've gone beyond safe, legal, and rare. Now it's like, yeah, hey, say your abortion. Let's brag about this. I saw a billboard on the south side of Des Moines that was part of the Say Your Abortion campaign from Planned Parenthood. This is, "I had an abortion. It's just health care." No, it's not. It's murder. Health care doesn't put to death an unborn baby. Healthcare doesn't kill people. It's just unreal. Speaking of unreal, U.S. Senator Kamala Harris, who's running for president, was in Des Moines this week, and she made some unreal statements as well. And I want to play the first one, where she basically says, "Hey, yeah, I want to get rid of your private insurance."
Just to follow up on that, and correct me if I'm wrong, to reiterate, you support the Medicare for All bill, I think initially co-sponsored by Senator Bernie Sanders. You're also a co-sponsor on it. I believe it will totally eliminate private insurance. So for people out there who like their insurance, they don't get to keep it?
Well, listen, the idea is that everyone gets access to medical care. And you don't have to go through the process of going through an insurance company, having them give you approval, going through the paperwork, all of the delay that may require. Who of us has not had that situation where you got to wait for approval and the doctor says, "Well, I don't know if your insurance company is going to cover this"? Let's eliminate all of that. Let's move on.
Now she goes on a diatribe about gun control.
There's no reason in a civil society that we have assault weapons around communities that can kill babies and police officers. Something like universal background checks. It makes perfect sense that you might want to know before someone can buy a weapon that can kill another human being. You might want to know, have they been convicted of a felony where they committed violence? That's just reasonable. You might want to know before they can buy that gun, if a court has found them to be a danger to themselves or others. You just might want to know. That's reasonable. But here's the thing, and I'm just going to be very, very blunt about this. You know, for years I've asked folks in D.C., you know, is the NRA real or is it a paper tiger? Like, what's the deal there? And the feedback is about 50-50. But here's what I've witnessed and what we have all witnessed. We have witnessed a case where a seated member of Congress, acting in her official capacity as a member of the United States Congress, was shot and permanently injured. Her name is Gabby Giffords. The people who work with her every day, who know her, you know, we have colleagues, we know them, we know their children, we break bread, we share holiday moments with them. The people who knew her didn't act. She was acting in her official capacity, not on vacation somewhere. You would think even out of self-interest they would have acted. They failed to act. 26 and 7-year-old babies were massacred in Connecticut. They failed to act. Here's what I think. I think that somebody should have required, and this is going to sound very harsh, I think somebody should have required all those members of Congress to go in a room, in a locked room, no press, no one, nobody else, and look at the autopsy photographs of those babies. And then you vote your conscience. This has become a political issue. This has become a political issue. And there is no reason why we cannot have reasonable gun safety laws in this country. And guess what, guys? Here's the reality of it also. We're not waiting for a good idea. We have the good ideas. An assault weapons ban, background checks, right? We're not waiting for a tragedy. We have seen the worst human tragedies we can imagine. So what's missing? What's missing is people in the United States Congress to have the courage to act the right way. And I'm so sorry for your loss. And I thank you for using your voice. But there are too many parents who are grieving the loss of their children, too many communities that are grieving the loss of lives that should never have been taken.
I could get behind Senator Harris's idea to show pictures of autopsy photos to members of Congress before they vote on gun control legislation if we could also do the same, show pictures of babies who have been aborted to legislators before they vote on abortion legislation. I think that would be only fair, don't you think? But seriously, her ideas, none of these ideas that she suggested are new. They've been around for years. And there's also a lot of misinformation behind her ideas. We've had an assault weapons ban in this country that basically sunset. It did nothing to reduce gun crime. The murder rate did not significantly drop because criminals don't care about gun control laws. That's not going to stop criminals. Also, I'd like to point out, too, she talks about universal background checks. There are already background checks in place that people have to go through before they can purchase a weapon. Both, there's federal requirements, then a lot of states there's state requirements. There's talk, I know they used to talk about the gun show loophole, which, frankly, it doesn't exist. If you're a licensed dealer, you're going to have a background check. Now, you could expand background checks, I suppose, to private, private sales. Good luck regulating that and making sure that happens. I don't even see how that's possible to enforce that. But the fact is this, folks, there isn't a single gun control measure that they've introduced that would do anything to stop the mass shootings that we've seen. Nothing. So these ideas she's talking about, having these ideas, they're ineffectual. They're not going to work. All they're going to do is restrict people's rights. So that's incredible. She's probably going to be looking at, she's very charismatic. She's very popular. I would not be surprised to see her be a front runner. I think the Democratic nomination will pan out. Basically, we'll have to see who all gets in. I think former Vice President Joe Biden could suck the air out of the room if he gets in the race, and we're still not certain whether he's going to do that. But if he doesn't do that, I would not be surprised to see Kamala Harris right in the thick of it. So it's important to listen to what she has to say, and what she has to say is frankly frightening. She wants a Green New Deal. She wants to take away private health care. She wants Medicare for all. You know, no idea how we're going to pay for all this, by the way. But there you have it. One of the Democrat, prospective front runner for the Democratic Party's nomination for president. it's going to be a wild ride. So coming up next, I want to play you a conversation I had with Chuck Hurley. He's the vice president of the Family Leader. He and I talked about legislation that they're advocating, legislation we need to be mindful of with the 2019 session of the Iowa legislature, as well as the things that they're pushing for and their priorities for this session as well. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Chuck Hurley.
Well, hey, Chuck, welcome to the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. I appreciate you coming on.
You bet.
So I just wanted to just pick your brain. We're a couple weeks into the Iowa legislative session now, and what, first of all, what are the family leaders' priorities this session?
We are always prioritizing the issue of the sanctity of human life, and because of last June's Iowa Supreme Court decision finding a right to abortion in the Iowa Constitution after, 170 years or something. Anyway, the Constitution was passed in 1857, and suddenly there's a right to abortion in 2018 that five judges were able to find when nobody else has been able to find it. This struck us as sort of the height of judicial activism. They actually used the words evolving standards to find this right, and they use the word implicit. There's an implicit fundamental constitutional right to abortion. So our number one objective at the legislature, Shane, the next really three or four sessions, is a constitutional amendment to overturn or overrule that Supreme Court decision and return the power to regulate abortion to the legislature and not put it in the hands of judges.
So let me ask you this. And obviously this would be a draft, because it would be tweaked, but what would that language look like?
SJR 9, introduced last week by 29 senators, is the language that we prefer at the present time. It's a little bit of a catch-22. We needed a bill to begin the discussion and to point people to, but that bill will need to go through committee, full Senate, and then start over again in the House. And that language could change before final passage, sort of depending on what lawyers and other people say is the strongest language to overturn that decision, and then also language that the general public can understand real well and be able to make an intelligent vote on it in 2021 or 2022.
Okay. One thing, obviously, that decision striking down the waiting period was disappointing. And that kind of, that pretty much previews how they're going to respond to the heartbeat bill when that lands in the Iowa Supreme Court. I have no confidence that they're going to rule in favor of the heartbeat bill, which begs the question, and I know Representative Holt has expressed an interest, and a lot of us have expressed an interest and have been talking about for a number of years, especially since the Varnum decision in 2009 about reforming the judicial selection process. Is that something you think needs to happen, and what do you think would be the best course of action for that?
Well, those are two great questions, and I'll get to them just in a second. I do want to say, before we move on from appealing the heartbeat decision, the fact that two of the five judges on the Supreme Court who concocted this right to abortion have retired.
True.
And so there certainly is the opportunity for the two new justices to agree with Mansfield and Waterman in their dissent, saying that's absurd that there's a right to abortion in the Iowa Constitution. So I do think it's worth appealing on that
definitely.
Basis.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't mean to imply it shouldn't be appealed. I'm just, even if the two join, Waterman and the other justice, we still unfortunately have a minority on the court.
Well, actually, that would make it 4-3.
That's right. You're right. Yeah, I was thinking U.S. Supreme Court with nine justices. We only have seven. Yeah, math. I was practicing some common core math there, Chuck. So.
Yeah. There you go. So just I know it's a long shot because the system that we have, which we'll get to in a second, the system that we have seems to thin three, more or less liberal possibilities or nominees to the governor, and then she's got to select one of the three. As one legislator told me last week, liberal, more liberal, and most liberal. So it is a long shot, but yet there's another reason to appeal it, and that is there are going to be five of the seven justices on the retention ballot in 2020.
Okay.
And it would be good to get those two newcomers on record, what they believe about a constitutional right or not to abortion, before they're on the ballot. And so there's a couple of really, really important reasons for that to happen, although there's some rumor out there that Governor Reynolds might not appeal it, and I think that would be a mistake to not appeal it. So anyway, those are my thoughts on the heartbeat law, the litigation, and the appeal. But as far as us supporting changing the way we select judges, I think it's high time we change that. It's just not American. It's not right to have 7,500 out of 3.1 million Iowans, 7,500 of them choose a third of our government, the courts. And
right.
That's the Bar Association, the lawyers. And even though I'm a licensed attorney, I don't think I should have that kind of inordinate power. It's just wrong.
Right. Yeah, for our listeners who aren't aware, basically the Iowa Bar Association members choose half of the judicial nomination commissions. So, of course, the senior judge usually sits on the commission, or not usually, they do sit on the commission. So basically, you've got a majority of Bar Association members on the commissions, which gives them a leg up when it comes to nominations. And unfortunately, they tend to be left to center.
Yeah, and just one quick correction there. It's actually not the Bar Association. It's not the Bar Association. It's quote the Bar unquote, which just means the licensed lawyers in the state.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a member of the Bar Association. You have to pay dues and blah blah blah. Blah. But it is the licensed lawyers in Iowa that vote, and it's just it's not equal representation. And they are a left-leaning bunch. I remember when I was a brand-new lawyer in Fayette County, there were, I think, three Christian lawyers out of, 15 or 20. And So we are badly underrepresented, and so we just don't get very good nominees usually. So anyway, it's time to change it. And then your second question is, what does that look like? I think the governor's going to propose a redo that will be very proportionate, that would allow every Iowan an equal say through their representatives, through the governor, through their senators, through their representatives in the House. And so there won't be that disproportionality. I don't know the exact number of commissioners from each chamber, that sort of thing. I just know that they're working on a pure representation versus a skewed misrepresentation.
Okay, so would that require a constitutional amendment, or is that a way to try to fix the problem without, you know, having to go the amendment route?
It would not require a constitutional amendment to change the way commissioners are selected. It's a fascinating little article for your listeners if they want to look at the Iowa Constitution. I think it's Article 5, where after 1974, I believe, the legislature was given power to change the way commissioners are selected. If we wanted to change it to a federal system where the governor nominated and the Senate confirmed, for example, that would require a constitutional amendment.
Right, right. Okay. Well, that certainly is an easier lift to change it the other way than to try to amend the Constitution, which obviously
that's right.
it takes a lot, which it should. But yeah, okay. Yep. That, interesting. So any other bills on the horizon that our listeners should know about?
Yeah, there's several other things that our ministry is heavily involved in. We have had numerous discussions throughout the last several years and including in the last 2 weeks with legislators about some religious liberty legislation, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which 22 states, I think, have passed. Mm-hmm. The federal government has passed, but Iowa has not. And then campus free speech, freedom of association bill called the Forum Act that passed the Senate last year and got stalled in the House. That will be up again this year. And then on the topic of foster care, or even what we are calling informal foster care, we need to pass a law that allows a parent or parents to temporarily give a caregiver legal authority to parent. And this is designed to help kids stay out of the government system when a family is having struggles and, let's say, you know, they're split or dad's not on the scene and mom needs to go in for some inpatient drug rehab. Mm-hmm. That mom can sign a power of attorney in most states where she allows a caregiver up to 90 days of parenting rights without a very expensive, time-consuming court case. So that's very high priority. I think it'll pass. It passed the Senate last year, 47-2. Got stalled in the House, but we've got a really good legislator in the House who's introducing it, and we think we're going to get her done.
Okay, so what's right now the current process? I mean, you know, what would happen in those circumstances, and maybe an example?
The parent would have to do one of two things: either go through a several thousand dollar guardianship process, hire a lawyer, go to court. File reports with the court, that sort of thing. Very expensive to do a guardianship. Or what probably is happening more often, let's say in our example, that single mom is going in for rehab and the child or children just go to grandma or, you know, a sister or whatever, and they uh-huh. that that caregiver, grandma, does not have any legal authority to parent, and so they're sort of like an undocumented, you know, illegal immigrant. They just live in the shadows and hope nobody catches them and hope the kid doesn't get sick and that sort of thing.
Okay. Interesting, because I know that we were able to, whenever we would have our kids, you know, babysat overnight, we would sign a consent form for whoever was watching them to be able to make a medical decision. And when I was a youth pastor, of course, I was a youth pastor in another state. So in Indiana, we had medical consent forms that parents would give us so we'd be able to get medical care for kids. So you're saying in Iowa that can't happen?
Well, in Iowa, there is no legality. It's undefined, and this law would define what a caregiver can and can't do legally, what they're responsible for. It prevents liability claims, and it's being promoted around the country by an organization called Safe Families. Safe Families has had a tremendous growth recently. They're saving state governments, like in Illinois. They're saving the Illinois government millions of dollars by doing, really, it's mostly family and church care, but with the power of attorney, there's clarity. Everybody knows it's legal, and it's recognized in state code. In Iowa, we don't have that recognition in state code. You'd have to get a guardianship to be legally recognized.
That's interesting. I didn't realize Iowa, that wasn't on the books. So that seems like a common sense thing to do. So hopefully it'll get through. You said the Senate passed it, so it's the House that needs to.
It passed 47-2 last year in the Senate. The House, it got held up. We don't know exactly why. We tried to figure it out. We think maybe the Bar Association, trying to protect lawyers' turf to make money off guardianships. But nobody would come right out and say that exactly. But we did go to the Speaker and the Majority Leader before session started, and it looks like this year we're probably going to get her done in the House.
Good deal. So what else is on the horizon?
Something called cliff effect. It's where people who get a job, they've been on government assistance. Once they earn a certain amount, they lose all their government assistance. And so there's a disincentive to go to work for a moderately low wage. Right. And Charles Schneider, Senate President, Jack Whitaker, Majority Leader, told us in our pre-session meeting that they are very, very interested in trying to ameliorate or get rid of that cliff effect and encourage more people going to work and gradually getting off of government assistance.
Interesting. So, obviously, those are bills that are good, and we should support, and we should encourage your representative support. Anything on the horizon where we need to be, warned about that bad bills coming down the pipe?
Well, our ministry believes that gambling is a vice. In fact, in the Iowa Criminal Code today, if you turn to Chapter 725, you'll find a chapter actually titled Vice. And the first four sections are prostitution, the next 14 are gambling. And so our criminal code treats gambling as a vice, just like it treats prostitution as a vice. People say they're victimless crimes or whatever, but history has shown gambling and prostitution are vicious. They trap people, they ruin lives. And so, there's a big push to expand gambling this session, and we're going to be fighting against it. But, there's so much money, Shane, in gambling that it's like, right. if
if gambling interests get together and conspire together and they're not fighting each other for a bigger share, gambling seems to go through. And the history of gambling, as you probably know, Shane, is gambling expands with government approval up until there's a high-level corruption scandal, like a governor or a speaker goes to prison. And so until there's a high-level scandal, I'm afraid our culture is in for more devastation from ever-expanding gambling.
So currently, where are they wanting to expand? I mean, what have you seen so far?
Well, the big money is in getting gambling available on iPhones. So that,
oh gosh,
kind of like, you know, crack cocaine, you can gamble 24/7 from your home or office or car. And so I think that's the big push this year, is trying to get sports betting and maybe some other forms of betting legalized over our iPhones.
Even if you support gambling, that seems like a really bad idea.
Well, you know? It depends on who's getting the dough, man, and the people that are getting more dough off of it sure think it's a great thing. And unfortunately, you know, money talks when it comes to gambling legislation.
Oh yeah, because we're always told that, hey, well, it's gonna you know, send money back into the community. I know that's what we hear all the time with Prairie Meadows. So. But people don't really consider or stop to consider the impact on society that gambling makes and the cost that, you know, to taxpayers as a result, whether it's you know, increased crime or people on who end up going on welfare, they lose jobs, whatnot. Okay, go ahead.
There was a very scholarly professor, Earl Grinnells, out of, I think, Illinois, who did massive study after massive study on gambling, was never assailed for his studies. They were impeccably done, peer-reviewed, blah, blah, blah. And they virtually every time they showed that governments lose about $2 for every dollar they gain. Wow. Because of those things you just mentioned. So it really is a losing bet for governments, but the gambling interests make bank. And the gambling interests, you know, spread a lot of money around to politicians. And so this gambling zeitgeist, you know, the spirit of gambling infects a culture, like I say, until there's major scandal. And then it's recriminalized, and then 10 or 20 or 30 years later, after people have forgotten, then they start low stakes bingo in the church basement again, and it just creeps back in.
Right. So what else on the horizon do we need to worry about or you know, at least be warned about?
I feel pretty good about most of the other things. That it's great having, you know, Kim Reynolds as the governor. I think she's got a good heart and a good head. And we've got really good friends in key committee slots in the House and Senate. So I'm not too worried other than gambling. There is one other bill that raised eyebrows one other idea. It has not become a bill yet, and that is mental health screenings for children ages 0 to 18. And so your listeners who are concerned about big government doing mental health screenings and, you know, who knows, maybe a government bureaucrat thinks that a kid who prays has a mental health problem, then I think we've got to be very careful and watch very closely when that bill gets introduced. that parents are still in charge of their children. And they did say they were planning to have parental consent for any mental health screenings, but that's just one to be wary of.
This would be done through the public schools?
Well, the idea hasn't specified. Senator Edler is in the bullseye of this thing. I think he's going to be the main legislator drafting and introducing the legislation. He's on this task force that put together these recommendations. And so Senator Edler's a homeschooler. I think he's a good, godly guy, common sense farmer type. And I think we can certainly have good dialogue with him. He's not going to just run roughshod over parents' concerns. My biggest concern is, even if the screenings are benign and wonderful and you know, they don't treat Christian kids as being mentally ill, you know, the administration could change in 4 or 8 or 16 years to somebody who does have a very secular worldview, and those mental health screenings could become an attack against people of faith. And I say that because I have heard in other states where secular people say that somebody who believes in an invisible God is literally mentally ill. And so, you know, we just need to be ever vigilant, Shane.
Yeah. Now, there was talk of a bill that's, or actually, I think it's maybe been filed. I'm trying to remember the representative who I wrote about it a little while ago. And his name's not coming to mind, but he wants to have public school officials visit homeschooling students. I'm assuming that's dead in the water. I hope.
I would assume so too. We've got some really good friends in key places, like Majority Leader Chris Hagenow and others that I think would, there's no way that stuff's going to happen. But if the majorities change in 2020, or 2022, we do know there are sitting legislators who hate homeschooling and will do anything in their power to try to reduce or eliminate it. So right now, these next 2 years, or even 4 with Kim Reynolds as governor, she could veto anything. I think we're in pretty good shape.
Okay, good deal. Anything else that we should be aware of, good or bad?
There's a whole lot of issues that Christians are concerned about. I just heard this morning, another death penalty bill coming up, and there's several pastors that will be testifying on that. Death penalty is always an important topic, since God's purpose for government is to punish evil, and that's the ultimate punishment. So death penalty bill, and then it seems like every other day or so, you'll get a new idea from another legislator. And so I would say for your listeners, just to be ever vigilant. We in our ministry try to do at least a weekly report, and if something urgent pops up between those weekly reports, we'll report on that too. We just need to watch and pray and be vigilant on these things. But I would say that, Shane, we really have some fine Christians in places of authority. And I would say the next 14 months or so, 15 months, we ought to try to get some of these things passed that we've wished for 30 years, like religious liberty, pro-life, those sort of things. We've really got a good opportunity with friendly people in high places.
Right. So Governor Reynolds, during her condition of the state address, pushed two constitutional amendments. One is restoring felons' right to vote. I don't know all the details of what that would look like, but right now it's rather subjective and up to the governor whether that happens or not. And I know she wants to have kind of an automatic process, as well as a victims' rights amendment, Marcy's Law, I think it's called, or based on that language.
Yep.
So is the family leader taking a position on either of those?
We will probably support both of them. Her language just came out today, I believe, on the Restoring Voting Rights Amendment. And we just discussed it at our office this morning. So I think there's a strong likelihood that we will be supportive of both of those.
Okay. Well, Chuck, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Oh, a question I ask all of our guests, because this is the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. What is your favorite caffeinated drink?
Does green tea have caffeine in it? I think it does.
I don't think so. Very little. but you like
very
green
little
tea.
That would probably be my favorite. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, Chuck, have a great day. Thank you so much.
God bless you. Thank
God
you,
bless
Shane.
You.
Thanks for what you do.
Very welcome. Take care, man. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please make sure to go to caffeinatedthoughts.com. That's caffeinatedthoughts.com. Also, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for our email updates. That way you don't miss a single update from our website because we don't just have podcasts. We put up daily articles as well. Also, if you don't want to miss out on any podcast episode, I would encourage you to subscribe to our podcast. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify as well. If there's an app or a service that we're missing that you'd like us to be on, you know, you can shoot me an email at shane@caffeinatedthoughts.com. And I'll try to make that happen. Until next time, my friends, stay warm. Definitely stay warm. And God bless. Take care, everybody.